Has America forgotten its history? Has America forgotten its roots? Is there a deliberate push to erase our history? Does it matter? Well, there's a fascinating book. It's not brand new, but it's been out a few years, and it's excellent. It's called Erasing History, and it's by Dr. James S. Robbins, who has written a lot, for example, for the publication USA Today. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point, and Dr. James Robbins joins us on the program. Dr. Robbins, it's great to have you back on. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, hey, Jerry. Thanks for having me on.
So tell us about why you wrote this book. I know it's not brand new. It's maybe about 5 years old. What was the genesis for it, or the catalyst that said, I got to write a book about this?
Well, it started because you remember about 5 years ago when we had things like people tearing down statues, and we had people burning American flags, and the kneeling in the NFL and stuff like this. And I'd written some articles from USA Today and also in the Wall Street Journal about these things. And then a publisher contacted me and said, hey, how would you like to write a book about this process of erasing America and erasing our history? So that's what got it started. And, you know, I'm sorry to say that over the last 5 years, I don't think things have gotten any better. I don't think my book stopped it.
Well, listen, there's a great recommendation for your book that you may not know of, and I want to go ahead and read it to you. I did an interview with Dennis Prager of Prager U, and we were talking about, you know, America's Judeo-Christian roots and so forth, and, you know, different aspects in which the faith, you know, played an important role in the founding of America and so forth. But this is one of the comments that Dennis Prager made, and, you know, I didn't ask him about your book, but here's what he said, and I'm going to quote him. There's a book out I'm happy to recommend. I didn't write it. It's called Erasing America. And that's exactly what is happening. The American past is erased, except for the isolated, awful moments, though kids today are learning how bad America was, but they're not learning that every country had slavery, every country killed indigenous people, because everybody who made a country often killed the people who were living there. I'm not excusing it, I'm just noting a fact. Where America differed is in its goodness. Badness is universal. Goodness is relatively unique. End quote. I thought that was very interesting. Go ahead and respond to that if you would.
Oh, it was very nice of Dennis to plug the book for me. I've been on his show a number of times, and I did a couple of videos for PragerU. And I mean, he's out there fighting the good fight, no doubt. I mean, Dennis is getting it done, and everybody should check out his work as well. And with respect to what he said, I mean, he's absolutely right. It's a shame that the revisionist historians or the progressive historians will focus in and amplify all of the negatives of our history. And of course we have negatives in our history. Every country has negatives in their history. You know, the indigenous people here were killing each other for that matter. It wasn't just Europeans who came in and did it. They were pretty good at killing each other before the Europeans showed up. But whatever the negative thing you want to isolate and amplify in our history, there has been a lot of good in American history. I'd say more good than bad by a long sight. Probably some of the greatest advancements in human understanding, human knowledge, human science and technology, certainly. So many good things in our history, and those should be celebrated way more than the bad things should be amplified. I mean, but many of the negatives in our history are things that we've overcome and tried to put behind us, whereas the good things are things that we can build on and keep going with. So it really makes a lot more sense to me to celebrate America than to just focus on all the bad things.
Oh, I see. So in other words, to the mind of a leftist that basically kind of wants to tear America all down and all that kind of thing, it's almost as if all of America today, in the year of our Lord 2023, is, say, like Birmingham, Alabama was in 1963. I mean, in effect.
Oh, well, certainly. In fact, I've heard progressives make the case, and you hear this a lot more when Donald Trump was president, but they would say that things are now are actually worse than they were during, you know, take your pick, the era of segregation or Jim Crow or the era of slavery or what have you. And they would argue, and they still argue, that things are worse and are getting worse than those days. And the reason that they have to argue that is if they say they're getting better, well, then maybe we don't need all of those, you know, DEI programs, affirmative action, or, you know, whatever else that they have to overcome those things, you know, from the civil rights program era. Well, if those things aren't working, you know, if things are getting worse, maybe that's an argument against them. But the point is that they have to argue that things are bad and stay bad or get worse, because the entire basis of their kind of grievance status, you know, is based on that. And if things are all of a sudden better, then that actually reduces their power.
Well, in a sense, then, they're coming from a Marxist perspective, right? Because a Marxist, at its core, it basically divides the world into the victims and the oppressors, correct?
Oh, yeah, 100%. And they may not – they, you see, when you say that, then they get into this nitpicky argument about critical race theory or critical theory in general, or if it's Marxism or if it's some other type of theory. And they try to – you know, with a hundred cuts, you know, they try to bleed your argument out. But yes, I mean, that's their basic framework, that there's an oppressor class and there's a victim class, and the victim class is somehow ennobled by that, and that they have legitimate claims against the oppressors, which include you and me and anybody they don't like.
What's interesting is that you and I are having this discussion at the southern border. The state of Texas is doing virtually everything it can to try and keep a floodgate of illegals from, you know, coming across our, you know, somewhat porous borders. And, you know, a lot of those people coming across, they're not all lily white. I mean, not to bring racism into this, but the idea is, you know, there are people of color who want to come here. They're voting with their feet. They're even risking their lives to do so. That sort of seems to me to say that, well, there must be something in America that those people, you know, are attracted to.
Yeah, that's kind of funny, you know, that these immigrants are risking their lives trying to cross our border to get into our racist hellhole of a country with no opportunities, right? I mean, that's the narrative. In fact, if you ask people, you know, polls will show this. Of where, other than their own country, if you ask globally where people would like to live, the United States is always the top choice. I mean, of course, they like their own country, but if they had to move, they want to come here. And it's because it is a land of opportunity, economic opportunity, social, political, artistic, freedom of worship, you name it. The freedoms that were at the base of the founding of this country are still here, and people around the world know this. And these are people who may live in really bad circumstances, not some kind of invented oppression, but a real oppression where they're, you know, if they try to worship in the manner that they want to, they might be killed, you know, things like that, which of course never happens here. But to listen to the progressives, they make it sound like somehow we are the oppressive society. And that's simply not true.
You know, what's interesting about all this is you and I are having this discussion and everything, but we're far from a university per se. And unfortunately, in so many contexts of the universities where you have conservative speakers attempting, you know, we mentioned Dennis Prager earlier. Well, he went and spoke at some school in Arizona, and, you know, they try to shut down the conservative voices. In fact, Yale University, or maybe it was Yale Law School, even had a free speech symposium. And the president of the Alliance Defending Freedom, one of these religious rights groups, by the way, it was co-founded by the ultimate founder of this radio station, Dr. D. James Kennedy, was one of the founders of the Alliance Defending Freedom. Anyway, they were all shouted down. Conservatives can't get a voice, you know, on the college campuses, you know, because America is so oppressive.
Oh, yeah, it's kind of funny how when you look back at Berkeley and the free speech movement in the 1960s, which was such a symbol for the progressives at the time, and now they're completely the opposite side. They're the ones who are shutting people down, censoring people, you know, finding ways to get people ejected or banned from campuses. And it's really sad that that's, you know, the youth of those days are the progressive leaders, you know, of today who are behind all that. And you would think that in the marketplace of ideas that well, if their ideas aren't strong enough, then, you know, okay, fine. But no, they just want to have censorship, and they don't want to hear conservative ideas or anything that they disagree with. And I think that this is showing up in public opinion because a new survey came out about how Americans feel about universities, colleges and universities, and trust in them is way, way down. I think people understand that the universities have become, in large part, not every single one, but in large part, captive of these ideologies, and that a liberal arts education, far from promoting kind of free thinking and a, you know, robust exchange of ideas like it's supposed to, is really more about indoctrination and creating the next generation of progressives.
You know, I earned a degree in history, a BA in a liberal arts college, respectable college and so forth in the 1970s. And I thank God that's when I was able to do it. I would not want to have a young person today, let's say wanting a, you know, a degree in history to go to the same school, you know, and because they would just be basically force fed, you know, political correctness and not the truth.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's something I deal with a lot. I'm currently the dean of the academic dean of the Institute of World Politics, which is a graduate school of national security and intelligence here in Washington, D.C. And in our curriculum, as you might guess, we don't have a party line. We don't have an ideological litmus test. And our curriculum is based on the recognition of American founding values in Judeo-Christian Western tradition. So we're one of the few schools that does that, but we don't keep anybody out either. If students or faculty or people want to talk about other ideas, you know, and have a robust debate, we're happy to do that. And the thing about that that's funny to me, because, you know, I went to school in the 80s, you know, back then that was, like your experience, it probably was standard. Like, okay, let's debate it out, even though a lot of professors were still leftists even then. Whereas today it's almost exceptional for a college or university to say, hey, you can have free speech here. I mean, that's almost an advertising point.
Wow, that's so true. Okay, we have about 2 minutes left. It sounds like you believe in American exceptionalism, so-called, which I guess today that's a controversial claim.
Oh, I should say so. I mean, when you look at this country that was founded by people who self-selected for freedom, you know, who came here in order to be free, and then throughout the generations, all of the immigrants who come here for the exact same reason and reinforce that idea of a country self-selected, you know, for freedom and liberty. Yes, it's a very exceptional country. A very exceptional nation and people who evolved here, not based on, you know, blood ties, not based on land or anything else, but based on an idea, the idea being human liberty. And so, yes, a very exceptional country.
Okay, we have about 1 minute. If there's anything you want to close with, and also feel free to give a website or your Twitter handle, whatever.
Oh, well, yeah, as I said, I'm at Institute of World Politics, IWP.edu. Again, one of the few schools, it's a graduate school, you know, that has academic freedom and free speech and honors the American founding. It's in our charter. So if people want to check that out, we'd love for people to do that.
Is it possible, 30 seconds remaining, is it possible that the pendulum can kind of swing back to a more pro-freedom, you know, less Marxist approach in our educational system when it comes to American history in America?
Yes, I think it's possible. I think we're already seeing some really good pushback, and especially at the state level, where finally state governments are looking at these curricula and saying, what the heck is going on? And they're taking constructive steps to change it.
All right. Thank you very much. Dr. James Robbins, again, I love your book, Erasing America. What's the subtitle again?
Losing Our Future by Destroying Our Past.
Oh, that's excellent. Thank you so much for being with us. All the best.